What he's really saying about the coins is that he needed $2,000 to get enough to, because the price of silver is going up so quick. By the time he gets enough to have a run, it's gone up again, and so it's costing more money to do them. And so if you want to get in, and we furnished him with what he needed to get it. He said he had to have it by Friday, so it's that part's been furnished. If you want to get in on it, what do you get out of it? You get the silver. All you're doing is buying silver. If you send him the money and it comes in, but I'm telling you, as Scott's been telling us since last August. But before that, it was going to go up in November, and man, has it ever gone up. So anyway, we'll give Scott about a minute to come up and tell you about him getting his mortgage getting his mortgage back, but then Stan, he won't take but a couple of minutes. I've got it rigged up here. If he takes more than a couple of minutes, he gets it.
Yes, Sean.
Self-destruct.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, something pretty interesting happened today. As most of y'all may be aware of the history of what I've done with property taxes, you know, back in July, I sent off a bond where you had them fill out the amount. And, of course, I got a notice of lien. I responded like in 30 days, which, as y'all all know, is way beyond the 3-7-10 rule. And so, you know, I got the notice of lien, and then I responded. Then I got a notice of lien to foreclose, and I responded, you know, 60 days or whatever. And when I came back after the holidays in January, I had an invitation, a command to appear in court in the 236th District Court. So anyway, I didn't really know what to do at the time, and lo and behold, I got hold of Walter, and he helped me create some documentation utilizing my father's DD-214, which is his discharge paper. I'm not going to get into the specifics of why that works, but basically my dad never got paid, and he was never granted his land upon discharge as promised, with a land patent, which means it would be tax-free. And so we filed, did a silver bond, copyrighted the case, copyrighted every entity coming at me, from the judge to the attorney to the court clerk to, you know, the county, the city, the school district, the case number, any detail we copyrighted. And so I got that was like in late January. Then about a month later, I got an offer of contract from an attorney that was representing my mortgage holder, advising me that the mortgage holder had been forced to pay the property taxes. Well, now, I'd put a bond on the mortgage holder, a silver bond, so where I put one on me, one on my wife, and one on my mortgage holder, so none of us were bankrupt going into court. But, you know, of course, he has attorneys to figure these things out for him, and evidently he was felt that he was forced to pay the property taxes. So he turned the debt, which went originally, you know, last year like $3,300 to $8,800, and now by the time the last attorney puts his $1,500 on, it's about $10,500 or so for property taxes. And you know, the attorney sent me his offer of contract to foreclose, and of course I responded within 3 days this time. Yeah, I'm still learning. And anyway, what was so interesting, that was about 2 weeks ago. Today, my mortgage holder came into my store in person, and he made me an offer that he wants to buy my house. I'm still digesting it as we speak. You know, we're fixing to foreclose on you, and you know, you've got to pay these taxes. And he came in today. He's like, you know, I can't keep affording to pay these taxes for you. So, well, I understand that. So, you know, what else do you want? Well, why don't you sell me the house back? And I told him, make me an offer. And we'll see what the offer is. Maybe a couple of weeks from now I'll have a little bit more progress. One last thing, if I may, just one more minute about the silver coins. You know, these exemption certificates that y'all have seen, Emmett has a stack of them over here. You know, we've been using them successfully. Walmart, Target, you know, Audrey, where are you at? Help me out. The Holiday Inn, you know, you don't have to pay the state sales tax. It is a use tax, just like Rice is saying. So you are exempt from paying that. Just give them the exemption certificate. Don't let them make a legal determination for you. As long as you issue it in good faith and they accept it in good faith, they are no longer liable for the tax. That's even, and that's even in their statutes. Never mind it. And so what I suggest to everybody that uses the exemption certificate, if you want to help out yourself and the Republic of Texas, the 8.25% that you save, that you keep in your pocket, you know, I can't tell you what to do with that. Those are your resources that represent your, you know, your life energy, your time here. But if you want to start a multifold effect, think of it this way. If you don't pay the state sales tax, then you're denying the de facto beast that's enslaving you the resources to further enslave you with. You're funding your own enslavement by remitting the tax to them, okay? I hope y'all can all understand that. You're paying your own enslavement, okay? And so if you quit funding that system and take those funds and keep them for yourself at least, but if you really want to do something beneficial for you and your family and your fellow countrymen here in Texas, and before you know it, it'll go across the country, take those 8.25% of your funds and purchase Republic of Texas silver with it. Now, yeah, you're going to pay a premium to get the silver because it does cost to mint, okay? You can't avoid that, and somebody has to pay that cost. Being in the so-called retail business, I understand the customer pays all the costs. It works that way in every business. The overhead has to be covered by the ultimate end consumer. Well, whenever you purchase silver, not only are you supporting the Republic of Texas and the Treasury, but you're removing silver from the supply that's available, creating more demand. And do y'all know what happens when there's not enough supply and too much demand? Well, you're seeing that going on right now. Ed, you were talking about that guy down Longview. I got a correspondence from my broker that I do a lot of business with. He doesn't have any more silver dollars. You know, the U.S. government is out of silver. Bushke signed legislation, I think, August of 2000, authorizing Congress to buy up to like 11 million, was it, Ed, 11 million ounces a year on the open market. You know, the United States government has never bought silver before. They've always been a supplier, not a buyer. That's the first time in history that's ever happened. And why is it happening now? It's because the government's out of silver. And so there is a shortage. The derivatives contracts up on Wall Street are going to implode. And when that happens, there's not enough silver to deliver into the contract to fulfill the physical delivery. It's kind of like what happened with the Hunts, you know, back then. Same, but even magnified even more so. And so, you know, the end of May, I'm looking for silver to be $14, $15 an ounce. The legal and lawful ratio in it, Walter, in it 24 to 1. Well, I would think that probably by about July, that will come into effect. And so, you know, people, how much is silver? Well, it's about $8.20 per ounce on the spot price. And you wait till it hits 14 or 15. You think it's expensive now, it's still cheap. Or inexpensive, I hate the word cheap. But that's what's going on with silver. There is a shortage. It's here. It's starting to manifest itself. If you go to any chart, like at Kitco or any chart program, and look at the silver price, especially the 10-year, you'll see that it is actually going just like this now. It's going into a parabolic phase, which is an exponential increase. And it's just, people call it a moonshot. It won't go up forever. And when it comes back down, it will come back down to some degree. But it always overshoots. Now, of course, the key is buying low and selling high. And so what you're doing right now, remember a year ago, Ed, the ratio was 82 to 1?
Yes.
You remember that in the good old days? It's 51 to 1 now. So in other words, if you had bought silver a year ago, instead of buying an ounce of gold, you could have bought 82 ounces of silver. Well, today you could take just 51 of those ounces of silver and trade back in for the ounce of gold and have 30 to 31 ounces of silver left over. And there's your profit. And that's how you actually gain and create wealth, is by trading your metals back and forth. It's known as ratio trading. There's always something low. Palladium, just a month ago it was $230. And I've been suggesting to people, if you're not going to buy silver, buy palladium. Well, now palladium's $330. And that's just in about a month. It's gone up, you know, 30% in a month. So you can see that it's not because the metal is worth any more. It really isn't, because every ounce of silver 1,000 years ago is worth that same ounce of silver today. The problem is the Federal Reserve notes are falling so much in value so fast because they're printing them, you know, every day, all day long, that it takes more and more of them to chase after that limited resource or the amount of silver. And that's what's happening. The silver's not worth anymore, but the dollar's worth so much less. And so, you know, people have been literally dumping their dollars. I've handled a lot of them here recently. And, you know, nobody has been able to say, well, you know, what I got's worth less than what, you know, when you go back into dollars. But why would you want to do that? If you've gotten out of the debt notes and gone into credit money and gotten away from the debt, why would you ever want to go back in? All you want to do now is just swap back and forth between, you know, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, you know, whatever else you perceive of value, but stay out of the debt system. Anyway, take your sales tax savings and do yourself a favor and buy Republic of Texas Silver. And what you're doing is you're taking that 8.25% and you're actually building a store of wealth. You're going to help the Treasury of the Republic of Texas, and you're going to help yourself at the same time. Plus, the mere fact of buying the silver, you're supporting the price increase because you're removing it from the supply side and increasing the demand. You know, these are simple dynamics of a marketplace, and I think everybody probably understands that. But, you know, that's what I have to say about it. Use your exemption certificate liberally, and don't let anybody make a legal determination for you. Thank you. Sorry, I have a question. I have one question. The question was, what when I copyrighted the case, yes, we did an addendum. And I mean, we went in there and we captured their DBAs, their oaths, their licenses, the bar cards. And by the way, I don't know if you knew this or not, Rice, but do you know an attorney is a retailer? Because debt collection services are a taxable item. And you really think they're charging state sales tax and or paying it to the state? That's something the Republic needs to bring up is, why are the attorneys not paying state sales tax? That's a taxable service. Chapter 151.051, a tax is imposed on each sale of every taxable item in this state. Taxable item has a special definition. Half of it's tangible personal property. The other half is taxable services. Debt collection services is like number 9 on the list, okay? And the definition of retailer, if you're involved in bankruptcy proceedings more than twice a year, you're a retailer. So attorneys should be paying state sales tax. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Stanley. Bring your CNI dog and come. He's got a lot of things to pass out to the people, too. Don't you have some papers and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Part of you got one of these. If you don't have one, hold your hand up. My assistant will pass among you. The rest of that is if you would please fold your donation when you put it in. And a guy out here on the side says, sure, just loan me a pair of pliers. There was a fellow, a rather prominent man, that was invited to speak one time. I'll do this while he's passed among you there. And he went to the dinner engagement. And the guy before him that was introducing him went into this big, long, complicated, detailed introduction. And when he finally got through, he says, now Dr. So-and-so will give his address. The doctor got up and he said, my address is 123 Main Street, and that's where you'll find me. He went over and sat down. This is a workers' verified statement regarding Form W-4. You can read through there. You put in your name, where you work, the entity's name, which is where you work, and who it's attached to, and their address, your name, address, and so on. It says you're over 18, can testify. And it goes on through telling them why
that the W-4 form is voluntary. And it shows you back here on page 5 that it is voluntary, how you fill it out. Then on the next couple of pages, it quotes the USC, or just some, the Treasury, Internal Revenue Treasury statutes, anyway, there to verify that. Yeah, 26 CFR Chapter 1, 03 edition. And then it also talks about this 2159, which is on the back page. And it shows you how to fill that out. Unless you want to copy this stuff and type it in, type in your name, address, etc., then you can just send this whole thing in and those forms are filled out for you that you do not consent. That's basically about it. I found this on the internet. It was done by out in California by a paralegal, Preferred Services in Long Beach, California. They supposedly copyrighted it, down there at the bottom of the first 4 pages. The IRS and those copyrighted the last pages. We don't care about them. So it's there for you to use. If you should be using a W-8. If your employer will not take a W-8, they insist upon a W-4, give them a W-4. Right there. And with all the rest of the papers, tell them to read them. And quit making a legal determination for you. That's it.
Does anyone want to ask him questions? Okay. Ask him.
You're new? Where'd they go? Oh, you're new to this, are you? You don't know about W-8s? W-8 is for non-resident aliens. You are non-resident to Washington, D.C. You are an alien to the United States Corporation. You're a non-resident alien. You do not live in Washington, D.C. or the possessions. Excuse me. Through the 14th Amendment and Social Security card, you became a resident of Washington, D.C., and a citizen of Washington, D.C. But with your redemption process, you expatriate yourself from Washington, D.C. And so that the W-8 falls into your category, which is what you would use. This came up because a friend of mine had a problem with they had taken a W-8, and then this year they still want to take a W-8. They want W-4. So we're going round and round with them on that. Friend's employer.
What do you do if you're already in the system of employment with a company? How do you approach them that you want to reapply?
No, you just take the W-8 down there and say, and substitute this for replace my W-4 with this. And you just turn it into personnel.
If they don't
want to accept that, they want to use the W-4, you inform them that the W-4 process is a voluntary thing. Also, under 5 U.S.C. 12, 05, I believe it is. It states that the W-4 is for federal employees only.
You're not a federal employee.
You're not a federal employee. You can look that up and show it to them, too. But there's court decisions that state that the federal income tax is voluntary for everyone except government employees. I don't know what it is right offhand. I can get if you'll...
Hold on one second. Get over there.
Larry's getting slow with the mic.
Yes, sir. If you work for a defense contractor, does that mean that you are an employee of the federal government, even though that defense contractor also builds commercial items also?
No. He's a commercial. He is a civilian agency. Okay? He just happens to have a contract for the government. Now, it could be construed that he is an employee of the government, but you're not an employee of the government because you're an employee of a civilian corporation.
Are there state laws that keep a company from discriminating against state residents or citizens of the state that work for corporations like this? You know, corporations like the one I work for, they ask you, are you a U.S. citizen? Of course, you know, that's a requirement for you to be hired with them, or at least they give you that impression. But I've heard that there's some kind of state law that keeps them from discriminating against you upon that declaration of U.S. citizenship and all that.
Not
that I
know of.
I'd heard there was. I thought maybe you'd know.
There are many places where it does not matter. Okay? They ask you anyway. It doesn't matter. They're also asking you because of the immigration type of stuff, requirements that they're being filled out, surveys. Social Security card, you don't have to be a U.S. citizen or a United States citizen or an American citizen. You can be a foreign national, still get a Social Security card. There are people from South America, Africa, Europe. They come to this country for a few weeks, get a Social Security card, go back home, pay in a little bit, and collect a lot. They've shut it down? Great. Great. I don't know, they're running out of money. So, you know, what's the difference? It's not on.
Okay, there we go. There's two items. One item is that with respect to filing, to putting W-8 in, what I did quite successfully a number of years ago was attach my copy of my power of attorney, in fact, with it, and put a statement with it saying that I was a trust and they recognized it. The second thing is that with respect to the just mentioned those about the I always had it out of my mind.
U.S. citizen.
U.S. citizen. Okay, when you fill out the paperwork, okay, when it says U.S. citizen and it says another checkbox for another area, I put down another box and I put down other and I check that. That seemed to work all right.
I think the form that he's talking about, it doesn't give you that choice.
Well, I know what I'm saying.
It's either yes or no.
I know. Well, what I'm saying is what I did is had a U.S. citizen, it had another box, and I put another box all together, and I checked it and put another.
Yeah. In this particular case, it's looking for two things.
Right.
One, the immigration status, and two, security status.
Right. No, I understand.
So you're either yes or no. That's the only answer.
I understand. I did the same thing, but I put that in other than went through fine. So.
Yeah. In this case, it wouldn't. I don't know what it is.
This question was, are you referring to an I-9? I've got a follow-up. I'm noticing the United States of America passport, it has U.S. citizen /national. What's the difference between a U.S. citizen and American national?
National is a citizen of the United of a state, and by extension, America, the United States. The U.S. citizen is a citizen of the United States, District of Columbia, and possessions. The difference in the passports are the U.S. citizens' passports will have all eagles, like you have on the first couple of pages, throughout the paper, the passport. The national's passport will have state seals on all the pages. In the instructions for a passport, it tells you if you do not have a Social Security number or do not want to use yours, fill in all zeros. And there are other things that you can do with the passport application to get the national style passport.
If I can get a clarification on what you just said, all eagles is U.S. citizen and state seals throughout the passport is an American national passport. I don't remember knowing how to fill it out, but my passport has state seals throughout it, and I'm surprised that I'd have an American national passport not knowing how to fill it out like that.
Hard to say.
That's cool.
That's what I've been told.
Okay.
What did that have to do with the W-4?
I don't know. Get your Republic of Texas passport. And I did the W-8 a long time ago, the place I worked, and never took anything from that point home. But I had threatened the company, so they didn't want to have anything to do with it. But the W-8 is the proper way to go, you were talking about, if there's a state law to protect you, it never has been a law that protected you of anything, because if they want to pay attention to it, they do. If they don't, they will not, because they're on the corporation side first, and they're on your second. And so that's the reason we don't talk to them about statutes. We don't quote statutes to them. It's for the simple reason that what I say is stronger than any statute that they have. They cannot refute it because I stated it. They can refute anything that you're bringing a third party, which is a statute, into it. They can refute that and interpret it any way they want to, because you brought this third party in. Be yourself. That's what I'm trying to teach you, is that you have to be free. You have to be yourself to state what you mean. You may take one of their statutes and quote it to them verbatim, but don't use the statute number or anything. But the W-4 is really, I was on a case where I was asked to come. The attorney wanted me to come in and testify about what I knew about W-4. And she called me the night before the trial was going to be, and she asked me what I knew about it. And I said, it's a simple contract between the employer and the employee. It has nothing to do with the Internal Revenue Service. It just keeps the employer from being sued by the employee, because he tells them this. I said, every employer has to have a document showing every penny that he's taken out of someone's check. He can be charged with theft if he doesn't have the document that backs it up. So it has nothing to do with the IRS. And so next day we went down to the trial, and so eight of my friends was on trial, and she came out at about noon. She said, well, looks like we're not going to need you to go and testify, because they're not even looking at Charles is the guy that we were going to testify for. And sure enough, Charles was convicted like everybody else. She couldn't bring that into the court, the fact that it was not anything but a contract, and that's all it is. It's simply a contract to keep the employee from suing the employer for taking too much money out of their check. So that's the way I handled it, and I handled it with a W-8 after a while. I just took in next year, in January, it says you change it between January the 1st and January the 31st or somewhere in there, and so I just took it down and changed it. And they never, from that point on, never took anything out that I didn't tell them. And so, and they never bothered me again after I threatened their company. So anyway, now we're going to get Walter up here, and I think this is part of the problem with silver, because he come out with his silver bond, telling people they had to have 21 pieces of silver or 21 silver dollars or whatever. And I think they went out, you get 1 million people going out and buying 1 million silver rounds or things, it kind of depletes things real quick. And I think that may be part of it. And I think that what Scott got into with the person wanting to come by and buy his house, they had sued him for paying the taxes. This letter went into the government. Now they realize that they were left open, because they sued him for something they had no authority to do so. And I think you're going to hear less out of the Seven Dwarfs when about taking people's houses and stuff for taxes. And I've told people for years, you cannot lose your house over taxes. Scott had a third party involved, and that was what the problem was. But I've done them for many people, and it's fun to get into a. It's one of them been going over 3 years now, and every year they same thing. It's like a rabbit chasing a fox chasing a rabbit around and around and around. He ends up the same spot all the time, but it never goes anywhere because you don't have to pay property tax, and they know it. And you know, the issue is, you say to the attorney or to the tax assessor, collector, I don't know who you are. I don't know where you came from. In other words, where do you fit in my picture? Where do you fit in the common law part? And immediately, boy, they give it to the criminal district attorney. And see, criminal district attorney always scares everybody. You know, now they think they're in trouble. So they usually, because he'll write to them and say, state law gives us the rights, or state code so-and-so gives us the right to collect this tax. And immediately they revert back. And and that's the biggest problem I'm seeing with all of this that we've been teaching to people, is that they simply, the instant the old slave master throws something back at them, they all of a sudden they say, boy, I'm in trouble, you know, and they go back right where they were. But we've been around and around on this with them, and all they do is every now and then you get somebody from some of these tax collectors and that try to help the cities and all that, and they'll say, well, we understand that you owe a lot of taxes to the city. We can loan you money to help you get out of that. So anyway, Walter, come on up, and when Larry says cut, I think he cuts the film off, but you can go with whatever you need to.
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Walter Check. I've been in this movement for a while, and trying to spread some good news about some things I found that are working and helping a lot of people out there with the silver bond. I've also have come up with other documents, such as the affidavit to file with pecuniously that Scott had mentioned earlier, which Jim pecuniously simply means without money. So when you go to court, the court has to pay everything from A to Z, including the IBA attorney for you, which is the international bar attorney, all the court fees, costs, forfeitures, fines, penalties, etc. Okay, I'll slow down. There's that document, and the other document I have besides the silver bond, and that is a tie-in with the addendum of copyright that he had mentioned. And I'm using this quite successfully in a number of cases nationwide, and this really messed up people over in Abilene. I see Joe back there and some other people. And that had turned a case on its head, I think, over there so far, where we had gone in, and that's where I first used this, where we had gone in and find out to realize that these attorneys don't have DBAs registered about 99% of the time. And they're so proud and arrogant, they think they can just rule everything with their name, but their name is not registered. So typically we go in and register the DBA of their names, but it won't be in their name anymore. I mean, we basically take over the name of the business and do this and copyright it. And one little trick I'm doing now is also going in doing a power of attorney in fact over that same name. So we have the copyright and power of attorney in fact over that name. They're helpless because you can wind up. Basically, you own them totally from A to Z, and of course, that's all put into UCC as well. So there's some little strategies I have found that do work, and some things that I've also I'm using more now is a offer and compromise letter I've developed some years ago, and Mitch had given me some letter he had put together based on what I had given him. So. The documentation we're having and getting in this group is getting stronger and stronger every day. And that's a very important thing because, you know, people are rising up and realizing that there is a way to have a success. And not every success is totally apparent, but as you go from day to day and month to month and month to month, you'll see that things are improving and there is less oppression, and that's what this whole deal is about. And I'm glad to see that people are calling me left and right, although sometimes I work till 3, 4 in the morning like last night, but that's fine. One thing I'm doing on the Silver Bond, by the way, is that I have integrated so far with Access Database, where you put the information in the database and it fills in all the information in the Silver Bond, but I also have done it for copyright and power of attorney. And I plan to do it also for several other documents as well. And this will be available on the market, but I also will have to do the documentation on it, and that takes me longer because I can do the programming pretty rapidly, but then I have to sit down and figure out how the average person will look at it. So it takes a while to strategize that so people can understand it easier. Maybe I get somebody to help me out with that. The other area, of course, with the bonds now, it's a lot easier for me to do that. I did my first set of bonds today with that, with the database, and it's totally automatic. Where you put the information in there, it determines whether the person's in Republic of Texas or not. There's a little switch it does on there. It also determines whether the person is the right gender. It also goes into capitalizing all the names properly and puts everything in the proper space. So you just put the information in one place and in different places, and it does all the computations automatically. So it's really slick. So it'll save a lot of time and should be error-free. So that's the key thing. Let's see, what else can I say? The silver bonds have been used quite successfully, of course, and as you know, in getting people out of jail and now with property tax and a number of other issues across the country, people have been calling on me for tying into murder cases to, I think on Perry Mason or something. But I'm getting all kinds of response from people with all kinds of problems across the country from A to Z. And my phone is going from early in the morning to late at night. Nonstop, and people can verify that. It's just a matter of fact. But my email is getting jammed up too. Even though I have 25 megs on there, it gets jammed up every day. I have to unload it. So I think a lot of things are going on. I have to improve the size of everything. Just Texas size, I think. You know. So just to be able to handle all the responses here. But basically, if you don't know what Silver Bond is, for people that are tuning in the first time or watching the videos, what the Silver Bond does is simply is an alternative way to pay. And a bond, as you simply know, is a promise to pay. And with this, the promise to pay is conditional. In other words, you have to have a
you have to have the other side do something for you to respond with the silver. You're putting in $21 in the silver, because if you have $20 or more in silver, you're not bankrupt. That's first of all. But there is a problem for the courts, because the courts and the other side typically cannot accept silver because they are in the Federal Reserve note dollar system. And as such, they have a dilemma. I mean, you're offering them at least $21 in silver, and they have to respond in 3 days. But they have to respond under, first of all, under penalties of perjury. That means they have to swear under penalties of perjury for everything, point for point, on the affidavit. All assumptions and presumptions we have to be done with three witnesses as well. And they have to have proper seal of authority, which is, if you don't know what seal of authority is, they are seals. They're put into government documents, and somebody has to have a seal of approval, basically, as a higher authority. And another area is that they have to do this all within 3 days under Truth in Lending Regulation Z. And if they don't do that, they are simply collaterally stopped. In other words, they cannot ever bring up those issues again, according to law. And this is a lot better than a default. A default is simply, it can go on forever, but a collateral estoppel basically just closes them out where they can never come at you again. Now, there are all types of lawless agencies out there, and I can't guarantee these instruments I have will work each and every time. One of the major things that I would recommend is that you have to have faith in the paperwork. If you're wavering in using it and thinking that, well, you can use an attorney or use some other strategy or try to mix it with other documentation, you probably fail. I've seen this already happen. But if you stick with it and use it all the way through from A to Z, the chances are pretty good that you'll come through it alive and then also with the property. So that's some things there too. Also, I might mention that I'll be doing a video with David Rideout here in the back tomorrow about this. And Dave Rideout also put out a very good video about who you are and what you should be, what you should appear as when you're dealing with these different entities, and what you should say in courts and different areas. So he and I are going to put together something tomorrow as well and put that out available where people can see it and really inform people, because it's one thing to have very good documentation, which I have here, but secondly, if you don't know who you are, that can throw everything right out the tubes. Yes.
I just wanted to say that, excuse me, that's ringing there. Tomorrow at the Golden Corral, it's really right on the east-hand side of 360, north of I-30. It's right on the service road. It's at Avenue H. If you're coming south, you exit Avenue K and go on the service road to Avenue H and cross over going east to the left. And it's right there behind that hotel. Anyways, we're doing two back-to-back. One will be 4:30. We're saying 4 o'clock, but you know we're really going to be setting up at 4 o'clock. 4:30 to 6:30, a two-hour video. And then having a break, and then having it from like 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock is the second video. So most people will probably be able to come to the second one, but you know, you're all invited to come to the first one, even though the room only seats 35. So it's more than 35 here. But we're also going to have input from Joe, and we'll have input from Scott as well. So very good.
Oh, by the way, here's a copy of the video, for example, on the front and as well as the back that I have available on the market. And I do plan to improve it here with this database. I can't tell you exactly how fast I'll do it, because I am hammered on different areas to accomplish it. I also, I should have mentioned about the tyranny response team we have back here as well.
Yeah,
and, Scott is.
Yeah, Walter. I was wondering if you could answer a personal question for me.
Yes.
Well, why do you think my mortgage holder came back into my store today and offered to buy my house back?
Because you own the property.
Well, obviously,
yeah. You have an UCC, and he doesn't want to wind up paying the property tax forever.
Yeah, in fact, that's what he said. He said, you know, I can't afford to keep paying the property taxes for each year.
He can't get it from you, so he's stuck.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so he doesn't want to... So,
well, I mean, is that not some sort of testimony that the process does have an effect and it has really hamstrung them back on the other side?
Well, sure, and this whole strategy I developed and is using the silver bond, and sometimes, not in every case, they have to file it pecuniously. That ties in whether the person is a veteran or era veteran. But beyond that, using all of the other areas with the copyright, denim of copyright, and timing with UCC, and wrapping all these documents up very, very tightly. It basically, you're just putting a stranglehold around them. They can't move anywhere. And what was that about that one? Tell them about that one document received a few weeks ago that shows about for you to get an attorney, and there was nothing on there.
That you mean regarding the credit card case that I had with Citibank?
I think that was it.
Yeah, I had received a summons or a command to appear. Well, you were there.
Yes,
we were working on my property tax case, and then I got the offer of contract to come into court for a credit card case from Citibank for $3,600 that I had bonded off about a year and a half ago. And, you and I responded with the same paperwork, the DD-214, the silver bond, the copyright addendum, the process there. And so the attorney that had brought suit against me, her personal assistant sent me an offer of contract in the mail a couple of weeks later. You know, you can pay either 80% in two equal payments or the entire balance in monthly payments. Please sign by your choice. And, of course, you know, we sent that back and didn't choose either one of those and fired him, leaving him with no one but himself and all he is to perform intercourse with. And so,
by the way, intercourse refers to commerce.
Yes, interaction, right.
It's a legal term.
Right. And so, I didn't hear back from him after all. I guess he was busy with himself. And so, then a couple of weeks after that, I got a personal letter from the judge that was supposed to have heard the case in the original court. And it was, instead of "you are commanded to appear," it's like, "Dear Mr. Thompson, please contact our office at this number. We've read your paperwork, and we have some questions for you that we would like, you know, to discuss with you. And, you know, please contact us here." And then it went on to say, "If you choose to appear at the trial," and of course they never referenced any trial, it's just the trial all of a sudden, "if you appear without an attorney, the case will proceed to..."
That was it.
That was it. That was the end of the sentence.
Nothing
just
else.
Two.
Huh?
No period, no nothing. In fact, they even skipped the line and started a new paragraph. Yeah.
The reason why, I think we covered everything inside on them.
Yeah,
and so, their hair also.
Yeah. Well, anyway, as far as the tyranny response team, you know, Jeff Smith, Mark Coker, and myself have gotten together, and we are working with Walter to try to help him with his tremendous overload on paperwork. Walter's just too busy fielding the phone and answering emails to be able to do all that and the document preparation by himself. And so Jeff Smith has an entire office of computer equipment, you know, state-of-the-art equipment, furniture, and we've set up a location where we are going to be able to help people using Walter's database to create documentation on very short notice. And so if you have a question, if you can't get hold of Walter, Jeff and Mark will be manning the phones. The number to call will be 817-788-4665. That's 817-788-4665, and utilizing Walter's database, we'll be able to help create the documentations on a faster turnaround.
Any more questions?
Walter?
Yes.
I just want to ask a question here.
Sure.
How many, by a show of hands, how many people are renting an apartment or a house? Okay. By a show of hands, how many people have a lease purchase agreement with their landlord? Okay. By a show of hands, that's the same thing as rent to own, is it not?
Oh, no, I don't. No.
What happened with Scott today was his landlord came in, walked in through the door, and spoke with his tenant and said, "I want to buy your house back from you." Have you ever had that happen before?
Never.
You're the renter, rent to own, lease purchase, or the tenant, and your landlord walks in the door and says he wants to buy your house back from you. That's what happened. See, the landlord only has exclusive squatter's rights. And he's really asking Scott to be able to purchase back the exclusive squatter's rights. But what he doesn't understand, but maybe his attorney told him, was that there is a lien in the Uniform Commercial Code, because, and no, it's reflected in the Uniform Commercial Code, but the lien exists where it's copyrighted the legal description of the land, and perhaps even the improvement on the land. I think you also did the improvement,
yeah, well,
right?
Yeah, we did everything.
So that whole, the house is not owned by the mortgage company. The house and the land is not owned by the mortgage company or the exclusive who used to be the landlord. He has the title ownership to it.
Legal title.
Legal title. Okay. He's taken, actually lawful, because it's in the common law. All right. He's done copyright, a common law copyright and copy claim. So he has taken that back from the governor of the state and the state of Texas. So he now has the title ownership to that land. So here comes his landlord, supposed his purported landlord, and says, I want to buy your house back for you. It's hilarious.
They have the equitable title. He has the legal title. They want the legal title to go with it.
Yeah. But
yeah,
he actually has a lawful.
No. I want to add one more thing as far as getting the CDs. You just want to use your cell phone, Lanny, for people to call you on that in the meantime. That's the number is 214-597-2350. And also, we have a website that we'll have up, which will be at www.sweetspirittexas.org. And that is not quite up yet, though, right?
About a week.
About a week. Okay. So you can call. Also, you want to tell them about registering on the on your other site in the meantime.
Well, they can go there, right? That'd be a good idea.
Okay. Well, you can also go to www.troxlerusa.com to register. Yes. The phone number. Okay, it's 214-597-2350. Yeah, that's TROXLERUSA.com. You just go to that site. Right. Well, I hope so. I have to go to Abilene later this week, so I don't know how long I'll be out there. That's the problem. I've got so many things going. That's sweetspirittexas.org. Yes, you have a question? All right.
Two things. One, I'm glad you're using the database in MailMerge. Somebody else besides me is using it. It works great.
Okay.
Secondly, when and by what statute did the legal ratio gold to silver change from 15 to 1 to 26 to 1?
Well, it's 24. Well, let's see. I said about the 24 to 1. On my paperwork, I tell you about that, and that was due with the Clerks Association Act of 1993. I have it on the paperwork.
It was what?
I tell you right now, I have it right here. Get my glasses on, I can read it. Let's see, this is the best prescribable, let's see. It had it
be part of the Mintage Act, I would believe.
Well, let's see, there was an act in 1993 that I got it from. I figured out where I have it in the bond. Okay, here it is. This is at the Clerks Association of Washington, D.C. of 1855.
A little clearer, please.
Okay, this is the Clerks Association of Washington, D.C. of 1855, number 817.19 and 20, cost expense ratio 24 to 1, 24 Federal Reserve Note dollars, $1 silver pursuant to, let's see, this is Article 1.
That's not a gold to silver ratio.
No, this is the
This is the ratio of Federal Reserve note dollars to silver. That's what I have online.
That'd just be the price of silver then.
Right. Well, it'd be 24 to 1 on this documentation I have.
But the legal ratio of gold to silver is still 15 to 1.
As far as I know.
That's the rate and value that's established by the government for the Constitution.
Is it 15 to 1?
15 to 1.
Historically, it's like 16 to 1.
15 to 1 in 1873. Mm-hmm. Silver to gold. Going back to that. Yeah. The gold to silver ratio is what the value is set under the Constitution and by statute from the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually in a mintage act.
Yes.
The yearly mintage act. It sets that ratio.
Yes.
So you're saying that your ratio then is Federal Reserve notes to silver,
right? That's
which would be basically the spot price of silver.
Well, that's not really the spot price of silver. This is the 24 to 1 ratio, I guess, for paying taxes, for tying what the government acts for paying silver to. If you're paying Federal Reserve note dollars to the silver ratio, dealing with the debt instruments of the government is 24 to 1. That's separate. That's separate from everything else.
Debt instruments. Am I correct in remembering that Rice said that in Texas it was 20 ounces of silver, not silver dollars?
Well, I'm just going by the ratio on it half here. On the ratio is 24 to 1 on that particular act. I have to.
And these silver dollars that you're talking about, are these the 1 ounce silver dollars, or are these the 90% silver dollars?
Well, I'm just saying, it's basically, I could read this here. This is.
He's talking about your silver bond. On
the silver bond, I can tell you about that.
You asked for 21 silver dollars.
Right.
Are those the 1 ounce silver dollars, or the 90%?
Those are the 1 ounce silver dollars.
The 1 ounce silver dollars.
Not the bullion.
Is bullion.
No, they're
stamped $1.
They're stamped $1. The bullion stamped $1, but they're actually U.S. silver dollars.
U.S. silver dollars.
Yes.
As $1, and
yes.
They're 1 ounce of silver.
Yes.
Since 1993, I believe.
Well, they can be any silver dollars that are minted, as far as not junk silver, but you say also junk silver. Yeah, junk silver being 64 and before.
The 90% silver.
Yeah, those will work fine too, because basically the whole system has been fraud since 33 anyway. So.
Mhm. That's it.
All right.
$1.
Yes. Yes.
Is it or not we need silver in Texas instead of dollars?
Well,
Rice?
There's a difference.
We use the 8 where you can divide.
Mm-hmm.
It's true weight from Texas.
Yes.
The others is
5 elder. 31.1. Right. Right.
We use 32 ounces, so it can be divided equally.
Well, I understand. I'm just going by the laws that were set up by the United States and the Mint to begin with, as far as the actual silver goes. So that's all I can tell you on that end of it. But, does anybody have more questions on that or anything else? Yes.
Well, the main issue is whether. I think the main issue is whether a person is a pauper or not.
Yes.
It's not so much that you're offering on $21 in silver. You're stating in the bond that I'm not a pauper because I have X amount of dollars in silver.
That's right.
Is that right? That's right. Okay.
So they, and also, of course, the system out there cannot handle silver either, so they're in quite a dilemma. They have a promise for payment, but they cannot receive it at the same time. Yes.
So are you saying that the you don't have to use the other bonds that Rice has talked about in the past versus the silver bond, or you use them together?
Well, each of them has their purpose, okay? The other the bonds that Rice has, okay, these are bonds that can be collateralized by the other side for its payment, where they can actually retrieve, basically they take the money and they can, the signature on the bond is where they can collateralize it and make money on it. Now, the silver bonds, they cannot. And two differences between the bonds. There's a silver bond. The ultimate surety of the bond is the actual silver that you hold. The ultimate surety of the other bonds are yourself. That's the big difference, right? Take those two different areas. Yes. Any more questions here?
Well, but if one was not able to obtain 21 silver dollars or 21 pieces of silver, are they going to be construed as paupers? Are they going to be construed as bankrupt? Or is there a way that, I mean, you know, I already know what the answer is, but if you could share, you know, how one can declare that they are non-bankrupt to a fiction.
Well, the other only way I know to do it is to declare yourself under, like under Yeshua. Okay, and that's separate.
A flesh and blood sovereign, natural blood, sentient
right,
man.
Right.
Or
where he has paid all your debts anyway. So then in this particular case, that's be a separate issue. But what I did is I incorporated that
incorporated
with my silver bond,
yeah.
too,
yeah.
yes. Okay. That's a good question. Okay. Are we out of time? Is that it?
We're out of time.
Okay.